Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland. Well, thank you for coming back to my channel. This is marking 35 years since 17th of January 1991. I remember it when I was very little. In case you don't know, that was to push Iraq out of Kuwait, because that August 1990, the Iraqis had invaded Kuwait. They'd recognized that the Sheikh had fled. They'd recognized some other Kuwaitis present, the Republic of Kuwait, who days later requested accession to Iraq, and then it was absorbed into Iraq as the 18th province, and so on. Okay, and remember in Saudi Arabia, there's a news blackout. The Saudi Arabians initially said there'd been an understanding, misunderstanding between Iraq and Kuwait, and it's only 2 days later they admitted that it had been invaded by them. So sort of panic stations. One of my school friends was living in Kuwait at the time. We flew into Edinburgh Airport from Amsterdam, and the taxi driver told us Iraq invaded Kuwait last night, and a lot of the Westerners living in Kuwait were taken hostage, taken into Iraq. Was my friend taken hostage? No, he happened to be on holiday, so he was all right at the time. So then obviously these United Nations Security Councils telling Iraq to withdraw. Yemen was the only country that took their side. And Saddam Hussein said there were a number of territorial disputes in the region. Let's deal with them in chronological order. Number one, the situation, the Palestinians. There was a Palestinian minority in Kuwait who generally welcomed him because he was the big backer of the Palestinian cause. If any suicide bomber killed Israeli civilians, Saddam Hussein would send that guy's family a lot of money and stuff like that. So trying to let sanctions work, would sanctions bite? Would that be enough to force him out without killing anybody? Or was some Kuwaiti resistance brutality there? One of my pupils told me her father was living in Kuwait at the time, and seeing people publicly hanged was a daily occurrence. And then, the Iraqi soldiers, very badly paid and fed, just steal many houses or whatever. The Iran-Iraq war had just ended in 1989. So Iraq was sort of financially bust, was hugely in debt to the other Gulf Arab states, and couldn't afford to pay them back. There was a dispute about the neutral zone, who was pumping oil from there. The Iraqis saying Kuwait was taking more than its fair share. So, you know, Iraq had the biggest army in the Arab world, couldn't defeat Iran. Why are they taking on an enemy they can't defeat? There's an enemy that very easily can defeat Kuwait. The Kuwaiti royal family is given the use of a palace in Taif, Saudi Arabia. And then the Arabs discussing things and talking about it, might talk about it until the cows come home. And the longer that Saddam Hussein stayed in Kuwait, the less the chance he's ever going to be driven out. I remember a Britisher I knew who lived in Qatar said Saddam Hussein's mistake was to stop there. He could have plowed on through Saudi Arabia. He had a much bigger army. They were battle hardened. They were all experienced in fighting the Iranians. The Saudi Arabians didn't have any experience all the way through Saudi Arabia's eastern province. That's where the oil is. Ignore the rest of the country. It's too big. Most of it's just sand. So you could easily take Bahrain, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Oman. He would control something like 40% of the world's oil very easily indeed, and people would have to deal with him. On the other hand, would that be too provocative? Because people would take him on. So, and remember, the Soviet Union still existed. Would there be a UN Security Council for him to withdraw? And eventually there was, which gave a deadline of January the 15th to withdraw. So then assembling all the soldiers. So the United States sent troops. Germany had just reunited, and the Germans said, so soon after the Second World War, we're not fighting, but we will pay for it. So they gave a lot of money to defray the cost of the war. But even some Arab countries sent troops to fight against Iraq, Morocco, Syria, Egypt, even though Syria is run by the Ba'ath Party like Iraq, the two guys, Hafez al-Assad and Saddam Hussein, detested each other, despite supposedly espousing the same secular pan-Arabist ideology. So 42 countries sent troops there. First of all, it was Desert Shield, just to prevent the Iraqis advancing into Saudi Arabia. And of course, it was boiling hot there. And the Cold War was just ending. So sort of all dressed up and nowhere to go. Iraq had bought a lot of their military technology from the Saudi Arabia, sorry, from the Soviets. And actually, the Americans had a Soviet officer, I forget his name, who'd given them a lot of the data on how the Soviet technology worked, were able to defeat it, Scud missiles and so on. So anyway, January 15th was the deadline. He didn't withdraw. So that's when there was the air campaign, attacking about 48 hours before the ground campaign went in. Because although Saddam Hussein had more troops, probably more tanks, he had fewer planes, and there were nothing like as good. So the coalition was led by General Norman Schwarzkopf, Stormer Norman, as we called him, the American guy. who was actually had spent some time in Iran as a child. They destroyed a lot of the Iranian forces, sorry, Iraqi forces on the ground, particularly targeting the Republican Guard, their elite units and so on. And only then the ground invasion went in. The Iraqis even invaded Saudi Arabia, taking the town of Khafji, then driven out. So some of the Arabs to go in Kuwait itself, and then attacking on a broad front much further west into Iraq itself. So liberating Kuwait quite quickly. But the Palestinian community got a very hard time, were often severely beaten up because they're seen as having collaborated with the Iraqis. That was it. Goodness, over 1,000 Kuwaiti civilians were killed, over 3,000 Iraqi civilians. There was one particular bomb shelter that was hit. Was an accident? Was it deliberate? So the Americans refused to reach to reveal a estimate of the number of Iraqis they'd killed. Now, there are two possible reasons for that. Either it was far lower than people were led to expect, or it was just scandalously high. Had the coalition killed way, way more than they needed to achieve their military objectives? I remember reading about this, Tim Collins, that British army officer, seeing the body of an 18-year-old Iraqi and said he died like a hero defending his country. And it just brought it home to me that he's just as human too. To see his limp teenage body, there were people who loved him. He'd been somebody's baby. He probably wasn't a bad person, and he's dead. And so on. All these defenses that they built was useless. Saddam Hussein had ordered the oil wells to be set on fire to slow them down and things like that. So they'd looted a lot of stuff out of Kuwait, cars and things like that. That's why it was a huge success of the coalition, the willing. But would they go all the way to Baghdad and topple the regime and bring in a free country? No, they wouldn't. George H.W. Bush was the president at the time, and they thought that Iraq might use chemical weapons. So they'd been taught how to inject themselves in case they were poisoned with anthrax or whatever. Saddam Hussein had fired Scud missiles at Israel, trying to draw them into the conflict. And so the United States very strongly pressured the Israelis not to get involved, because that would fracture the Arab coalition. Then the Moroccans, the Egyptians, the Syrians wouldn't fight on that side. So Israelis said, well, then you've got to take out these Scud missiles, because they could have a chemical weapons warhead, which is why the SAS was there in Iraq trying to find these Scuds to destroy them, and so on. So anyway, the 1st of March was that ceasefire, and that's when it came to the end. And the Iraq renounced any claim to Kuwait, had completely withdrawn from Kuwait, and had mostly been defeated. There was a road where they're driving back into Iraq, and so many of their vehicles were destroyed on that road. The really gruesome images of guys who were just fried in their trucks and things like that. And then an uprising against Saddam Hussein by the Shia majority in southern Iraq, by the Kurds in the north. And George H.W. Bush sort of urged them to do so, but he didn't intervene to save them. Would Saddam Hussein be toppled? But when it mattered, most of his army remained loyal, and he eventually crushed them. A humanitarian disaster in Kurdistan and northern Iraq, aid sent to them, and some of the Shia insurgents and the Kurds bitterly disappointed that would be betrayed by the United States and other countries who hadn't come to their aid. I remember hearing an interview with an American soldier saying, I think we should have gone all the way to Baghdad and just cleaned house. But obviously, as pottery barn rules, you break it, you own it, then you have to administer it. And Saddam Hussein, as part of the ceasefire agreement, agreed to dismantle his biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons programs in a verifiable manner to be inspected by UN's weapons inspectors. And him not doing that, playing cat and mouse and pretending to and denying sites to this place, to that place, is what caused the Iraq War in 2003. But that was it. To many people's surprise, he survived. There were severe sanctions. There were no fly zones in northern Iraq. In Kurdistan, his planes and helicopters were shot down, which gave the Kurds a chance to hold out in the mountain fastness, which is why Iraqi Kurdistan is effectively independence. So here we are 35 years later, and they've stopped using Arabic. They're only Kurdish and learning English. And they've even declared their independence a few years ago, but not recognized by anybody. But that was the so-called Gulf War. And a lot of the Cold War technology was used, and it showed that the American technology was far superior to the Soviet technology. I know it was first up war that smart bombs were used a lot. Then there was Gulf War syndrome for some of the British Army. I can't remember which chemicals they were exposed to, but some had various illness for several years. And then the British government was denying it exist, and the Honourable Nicholas Soames, who was our Minister for the Armed Forces, was denying it existed as well for some years. So he can't really pose as the soldiers' friend as he subsequently wanted to be. wanted to do so. The British army is then about 150,000 strong. There's only 70,000 strong now, despite the population being higher. Republic of Ireland, we stayed out of it. We're a neutral country. Our army is very small. I remember that the commanding officer of the Irish army, when he retired, he gave a speech saying that was a missed opportunity. We should have participated. Anyway, that's a little bit about the Gulf War, or Desert Storm, as it was called. Thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, then on PayPal, George Callahan 79@gmail.com. Goodbye.